And my mind, I value the power of my mind and its ability to think and dream. And I never want to place it in a situation where that ability is compromised. And so for me, I had to come head to head and say, hey, you know what? I can't do this. So let me do my own thing. So yeah.
And that's how you got into your own thing?
That's how I got into
my own thing. At 3-4 months pregnant.
Yeah, but
Morisky, hey. Welcome to another episode of Sisters in Conversation. I'm your host, Tebelo Motshwane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I'm in conversation with Leah Molatsidi. Molatsidi, Leah, how are you?
I'm fine, are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, it had to dribble me there because I was like, K-L-I or K-D-I. And I know I asked you this before, so excuse me for that.
Basut Molatsidi.
Molatsidi. Lovely to meet you in real life.
Finally. Finally.
After all these years.
I know.
Since what, 2017?
I know, like we semi did this, but we never did it. Yes. Like, I don't know. It was so there, yes, but it wasn't
Leah,
there.
Leah has been a guest before. So the day we recorded, we were doing it via Zoom.
Yeah.
And something happened and I forgot to record.
Yeah.
And then I obviously begged her to come back. And she was like, nah, bruh, how are we going to do this with the same energy again? You know, it's not going to be genuine.
Yeah.
So we actually did have to give it a few more years.
True.
For you to pivot.
Agreed.
For you to move to Joburg. Welcome.
Well, finally.
Well, I mean, you've been here 2 years now, but a lot had to happen. The hard lockdown had to be uplifted. All those things had to happen for today's episode.
To actually happen
and for us to meet in real life.
Hello. That's exciting.
How are you?
I mean, I'm such a huge fan, so. I mean, I'm excited. I'm happy.
Thank you. Wonderful. I'm excited. I'm happy. But I know offline we were speaking about all the other business avenues that were not working out and how I came to know about you.
Yeah.
But before we dive into that, can we just get a little bit more about who you are? Where were you born and raised? How many siblings do you have? Just your childhood, some fond memories from your childhood, and then we'll touch on why you decided to study law.
Well, I'm a Bloom girl, born and bred. I was raised there. I'm an only child. Probably I always attribute my need for attention because of that. I grew up there. I studied law at the University of the Free State. But I think for me, my fondest memory actually has to be just the ability to dream. Because I've always been a dreamer. You know when you're alone?
Yeah.
I mean, I had a very strict mom. Don't go out. Don't go play. I'd literally used to watch other kids play night cricket inside
nighttime.
The house. Nighttime. Nighttime. You know, when they play starting.
Yes.
Mm. So I would be one of those kids who'd be watching from inside the house.
Sorry.
No. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing because... Yeah. Oftentimes we think that being alone being alone is a bad thing. But it's actually not, because you get to discover so much of yourself.
Sure.
That you don't necessarily get when you are surrounded constantly by people. There's actually strength in solitude that a lot of people miss, because, I don't know, apparently you always have to be around things and people in order for it to make sense. I've always been... ambitious to say. I think for me, what really sometimes stands out is that, a little known fact, I used to think I could be able to sing. We even had like a small girls group when TLC was a big thing. I was the L in our version of TLC. Used to sing. I've always wanted to be a lawyer since I was like 13.
Well, I just need to just take you back to When did you then realize that you couldn't sing?
Did this horrible thing. In it, it was me, Leah, then we had Tsofato, then we had Cynthia.
Oh, TLC. Okay. Okay.
I meant it when I said TLC. We went to, I don't know if you, I mean, it's Joburg. You guys also had KTV Market Day.
Yes, yes.
We also had that in Bloom. So we signed up. So we signed up.
Yes.
We went to go perform. And we thought, like, we were brilliant. But, you know, obviously, you know, audience feedback. Mm. You know, people will lie. Our parents will lie. Say, oh, you're amazing. Mm. Well done. But, you know, after that, the group didn't quite work out.
Sure. Some internal conflict.
You know, I mean, it happens in trios. I mean, Destiny's Child. You're, you know, it happens.
Yeah, it happens.
So, yeah. But then, I don't know. I think it's good to, like, get out of yourself and do those crazy things. And, I mean, what better time to do that when you're a child?
Yes.
You know, to figure funny things about yourself out, like not being able to sing.
Yeah.
Which I don't do anymore for everyone's sanity around me. So
yeah. Wonderful. And then take us through your journey of, you know, why you decided to pursue law. Maybe you can even start from as early as high school. Like, what were some of the foundations for you pursuing law?
I think I'll just start through, I mean, you're also a fellow, Mandela Washington fellow.
Yeah.
So, when I was a fellow, there's a particular test, I can't remember the name, but it searched like your strengths. Clifton,
yes.
Strengths Finder.
Yes. I was just like, I remember that because the emails used to pop up so often. Yes.
And my some of my strengths were wooing others over. Action, being strategic, and all of those things. For a very long time, I did not understand. I just knew that I wanted to be a lawyer, but some of the steps that I took, because some of us didn't have like career guidance or you know, those type of things.
Yeah.
But looking back, some of the steps that I took actually made sense because they actually were a foundation in terms of setting forth what type of lawyer I wanted to be. For example, at a very young age, I used to, obviously, I'm an only child. So beyond reading music, I watched a lot of TV.
Yeah. Yeah, you weren't fighting for the remote with your siblings.
No one. So I was obsessed with shows like your Ally McBeal, The Practice. And I'm like, oh, wow, that looks so cool. I want to be able to do that. And from a very young age, society used to say, geez, lawyers have to be leaders. So primary school, prefect. High school, head girl. And it was very intentional because I'm like, oh, I mean, it means there's some form of leadership that you need to take. Lawyers need to be articulate. So I took up public speaking. I took up debating. Lawyers need to be smart. So I studied really, really hard from a very, very young age. And no one was telling me, oh, you need to. No. I don't know. So sometimes it takes certain things to actually take you back. So that you can connect the dots to see, oh,
absolutely.
This is actually the foundation. So for me, in high school, a lot of it was around the public speaking, the debating. The leadership roles, figuring out and trying to manage people. Because unfortunately, for me, my favorite part, or is it fortunate, my favorite part of my childhood was actually going to school. Because that's where I got to socialize with other kids.
Yeah.
That a lot of
The socializing
part. The socializing part. Because obviously I'm not socializing with anyone.
I mean, yeah, come to think of it, I guess that was a good time. It really was.
So it was a good time for me. And so it taught me a lot around trying to navigate people, even though, I mean, I'm still struggling with it right now. I don't think you get to a point where you actually know people.
Absolutely.
But it got a bit better as I started, you know, figuring things out, or this is how you manage people. From a skills perspective, this is how you talk, this is how you pause, this is how. Some talents are natural, some talents not so much. For example, I'm very analytical, I'm creative, but not very technical. So I'm very big picture, very strategy. But the details, I don't know, man. Like, do you, you know, yeah, figure it out. Yeah, yeah. But I'm a very big picture type of, I can connect dots, but I don't necessarily want to be the one on the ground yes. connecting the dots, you know? Mm. Yeah. So that was it. And then, yeah, I initially actually wanted to go to Stellenbosch. Don't ask me why. Mm. I think I just wanted to get away from home.
Yeah.
My mom was like, no. You will stay in Bloem. You will study and you will live here at home.
Sure.
So, yeah, I studied at the University of the Free State. Geez, what a time. Yeah, what a time.
Mm. Yeah. And how was your varsity experience? Were you one of those, you know, social students, as you put it earlier? Or, you know, were you just, let me get the work done and get out of here?
First year was great. Because remember, I didn't live on campus. Like, the culture around that actually happens for students that live at Res, we didn't have that, but we had our own version of City Res.
Okay.
So that was built mainly for students who don't have a Res on campus, mm-hmm. but at least that have a space for them to actually rest, go, and also have a community.
Mm.
So when people were doing like challenges across in terms of different residents and all of those things, I was part of that. The singing, it was wonderful.
You came back to singing?
Yes, ma'am. But this time in a group.
Okay.
So your voice is hidden.
Okay.
So right. People think you can't sing, all but you right. can't.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Strategy, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. But I really had fun. I'm not going to lie. Like, my first year, geez, it was fun. I learned a lot about myself. I socialized more. You always find your cliques also in your first year. But I studied. I actually studied a lot. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Second year onwards, it's a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why second, like, did you become more social than studying?
Not really.
And then the marks were like,
yeah,
not coming to the party.
Not really. Second year was a bit tough because I actually gave birth in November of my second year.
Oh, yes.
Because I had the twins.
Actually, your story reminded me of my story. And I think that's how we connected in the beginning.
Yeah.
Around 2010, hey?
Yeah.
Your twins.
So the twins were born in 2007, November the 11th.
Okay, so.
So yeah, I had them when I was 19.
Mm.
So the journey then looked a bit different, but I don't know, I still got to learn, not necessarily socialize. But I had my clique, I had a group. I remember
that's so important.
There's a section on campus, I'm not sure if they still call it that. It's called Sun City.
Yo.
It's,
sounds dangerous.
It's near the food court, and we would sit there as a group, bunch of us. It was made up of all guys except like one girly, Charlotte. Mm. Like that was my crew. Like those people were really, like they saved me, honestly. Like in terms of my varsity years, navigating motherhood, navigating studying, all of it.
I think that I can really relate to that because just a few days ago when I was reflecting on my own journey, I don't even know what led me to have to reflect on my journey, but I really thought about the people that held space for me in varsity and made it possible. There was just so much kindness from students who I was not even necessarily friends with.
Yeah.
We didn't communicate often, but they would have obviously seen that I was pregnant during first year. So at the start of second year, like, people were just forthcoming with resources.
It helps. And
back then, there were, like, no, like, WhatsApp groups or whatever. Mm. But people were going out of their way to be like, oh, we noticed you weren't in class yesterday. Here you go. And that community really, really, I owe a lot to. It helped so much.
And the varsity friends, I remember Bidumelo and Linda.
Mm-hmm.
We used to call me. I roll with thirds. Hey. Three O's.
Coming with the group name now.
I remember, like, I would, like, have to study or whatever, and then they would actually take the twins. Take them off so that I could actually do what I needed to do. We were even part of a touring because on campus, in order to try and, you know, get more students or people to actually understand the campus environment, there's a group. I'm not sure if they still have it now, But as a community, I mean, you're a student, you get to be part of them. So we even had shirts where we actually were tour guides around campus to help other students say, oh, this is what you do, or this is blah, 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 blah. They were also part of that. So that community also helped, like Utemba and Gemini. I actually still talk to him now. But yeah, there's really a lot of people who genuinely came through for me. Mm. Like, I don't take that for granted.
Sure. And even though we can boast having had such a incredible support structure, there are obviously times where you just experience a dip, right?
Mm.
Whether it's confidence or whether it's questioning whether you'll ever, you know, make it or get your degree or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
What kept you going during the times where you were like feeling overwhelmed and just couldn't do it? Was there ever a time where you were like, maybe if I just leave school and just focus on motherhood, then that will be the solution? And what made you just decide to, you know, push through the studies?
Two things. One is good and one is bad. The first good thing is the dream.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I saw myself in my gown walking down Bloom's court steps since I was a little girl. So there was no way anything was going to stand in the way of that. So that really helped. The bad thing was sometimes in order to protect myself, I don't feel or experience pain or whatever emotions that are going to delay me in doing what I need to do right in the moment. So in reflecting, I don't think the awareness of being a mom at 19 and studying a law degree would have helped me. I only came to the realization that I'm a mom, I think, when the twins were like 4.
Yeah, exactly me.
Like, I needed to genuinely just go in.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they were there. I breastfed them, took care of them, had support, but it really didn't hit to me in terms of, because it's a huge responsibility.
Sure.
It's insane.
It is crazy.
It didn't hit me until they were like 4. And I'm like, whoa.
I'm a mom. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, this is it.
Mm.
So we do what we need to do in order to get where we need to get. And I don't know, it needed to happen, and I think we're better off.
Sure, I share the same sentiments, but I think with me, the realization came when, you know, I always did like the piece job in school. Like, I was doing a bit of retail, I was doing promotions and whatnot. And then I'd get my son's stuff, you know, like whatever, little things, or the shopong, pair of shoes, $60 or whatever. But the realization came when I got my first salary as a candidate attorney, which must have been definitely when my son was 4. And then the responsibility of that, and he was also then starting school at that time. And I was like, what do you mean? What is going on?
Is this making sense?
And now, you know, he's got a personality, so they're also calling you mama. And of you're course. Like, oh, he means me?
Yeah.
And then even the nursery school, they're like calling you to be like, oh,
that's the weirdest.
I'm like, okay, so why don't you call his mom? Like, why are you calling me?
Isn't that weird? Oh, no, but you're the twins' mom. You're like me?
So then the nursery school is calling me. I'm at work. They're like, no, he's coming with a fever. I'm like, man. They're like, your son. I'm like, oh God. Sorry, I'm coming.
It's really hard. Like, what happens? It's such a great protection mechanism.
Yeah.
But sometimes it really does happen. Like, you, I don't know, you just
you're in survival mode, right? And you're pushing through. And I think because my mom valued education so much, it was very important for me to
same with me
push through. I knew that it can't only be on my faith and my dreams alone, but her value and importance of education also just was that extra push that, you know, when my faith wasn't coming in strong, it would really just set fire beneath me.
You just reminded me of a conversation. I remember I was, you know, normal night, trying to study, very overwhelming. And I started crying. But you know, one of those dramatic cries. Very, very dramatic.
It can be an episode on its own.
Very, extremely dramatic. I mean, we have our own things, my mom and I, but I'll never forget that particular day where she said to me, "You will do this." Mm. And not in a, "Oh, no, you're not. You will do this. You will do this. You will get this degree. And even if it means you walk on that stage with those babies, but you'll do it." And I don't know, something just, and then you just go. We don't have the luxury to be mediocre. We don't get to be blah. You don't. We actually don't have that particular luxury. And whether it's a female thing or a color thing or just as humans, yeah, in order to survive. The way that things are set up, you don't get to be sad for too long.
Sure.
Unfortunately, the reality of it. You don't get to dwell in your emotions for too long. Because life goes on.
Hey, life goes on.
People move
like
on.
You can actually cry, but you're writing this exam tomorrow. Like that's
like is that gonna stop? Like
oksalai. you're gonna write tomorrow.
It continues. So sometimes there's a level of strength, or for me, my own journey, there's a certain level of strength that I gathered from people around me, but more importantly, for the dream.
Sure. And then the dream is realized. You walk down the steps in the courtyard and blah, blah, blah. Can you take us through, you know, your experience with when you're doing your articles? When did it become apparent to you that, oh, there's another stage to this before I can get admitted as an attorney and qualify to be in court, for example?
I don't know. I've heard horror stories, right? And I truly empathize, I sympathize, but I had fun.
During arts. Yeah. And we need the use, hey? Because also, like, we do need people who've had a good experience, because it can't always be us, you know, talking about the toxicity in the environment.
I promise you.
Which is also a term I think we may be abusing. Like, we are now scared of hard work.
Because we're too woke now. Yeah. We're too aware. Like,
banaba today, batsabam sebetsi, so batori working environment, it toxic. I get it, but we really do need the use that...
Genuinely be lying.
Yeah.
I had fun, and probably my colleagues will tell you too. I mean, so I did my articles still in bloom at the UFS Law Clinic.
Okay.
I hear issues about salaries back then. I mean, for us, we were almost neck and neck with the Canada attorneys at Legal Aid. So it was relatively better than those from private practice. But we had fun because it was an open, in terms of open working environment, we had principals, but we learned, and not just one area. So we had like 5 different areas. So we'd rotate, we'd draft. I remember my first consult, so scared. We actually had to call the client back because I asked the wrong questions and I missed some things because I didn't know, like, you know, what exactly I should be asking. But it got better. And I'm so grateful because our colleagues, like our cohort, like it was amazing because you had people like Faisal, he's now a magistrate in Bloom. He was the life of the party. I remember because we did our articles when the World Cup was here and the Waka Waka track was hot.
Yes,
we would be dancing. Like, he was the guy that could really amp you up and get you excited.
For the fan parks.
But then, and that's where I also learned the art of, you can actually, you don't always have to be the clown, but you also don't always have to be the serious one. Because we could have fun. And then when it was required, we could switch and focus.
Yeah.
zone in hard. Mm. He's one of the most brilliant minds that I know. Mm. So it really was a learning curve for me, particularly in terms of environment, understanding work, what that looks like. And for us, we had a lot more freedom. So, for example, just like Legal Aid, we also had our own courts in magistrate court. So when you were rotating in criminal court, you didn't even need to go to the office. You go straight to Maj. Mm. That's your office for the day.
Mm.
And you learn on the go, you know. And I cannot dismiss the importance of people in court that a lot of people actually don't take cognizance of. Your interpreters. Sure. Those people know the pleas in and out even better than you. The clerks, like, every single one. And they understood.
Mm.
Like, the level of generosity that comes from the actual community that we don't pay attention to because, absolutely. Oh, no, I'm a lawyer.
Yes.
I know better.
Yeah.
No, calm down. Can you're not even a lawyer yet.
You're actually not, hey.
No, you're not. Uh-huh. Like, calm down. Humble yourself.
Yeah.
You could learn so much from those people. The level of support and generosity given by them in terms of understanding, hey, stand up. Magistrate is coming. Do this. Don't like it's those nuanced things that nobody actually tells you you need to do this.
Mm.
That you only discover as you do it. But the landing is a bit smoother when you're actually nice to people around you.
Yeah.
When you're actually very, very aware and nice to people that you navigate and work with.
Mm.
Yeah,
hard to sell singing to hey.
Don't
because
ever.
Never underestimate actually even any conversation. Like
never.
An insignificant conversation could actually be the key to unlocking whatever it is that you've been praying on or
this
working
is why
on
you
or,
can't be dismissive of people.
Yeah.
And I think the sad thing that's happened lately is that we have lost that particular art of real genuine conversation.
Mm.
And for me, that's very important. This is why I don't keep a million of friends around me, because I need depth.
Mm.
Okay, your hair's nice, and then? yeah, congratulations, and then?
Great, yeah.
It makes me a weird person to be around, but I can't have a sustained relationship with people where the conversation does not take me anywhere.
Mm.
Like, what am I imparting on you and what am I learning from you?
Mm.
What are we getting out of this?
Mm.
So for me, it's always been important to actually, you know, engage with people around you. You actually learn so, so much.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for that, Leah. So take us through the journey of once you had completed your articles, you're now admitted as an attorney. When did you start really being intentional about the fact that you wanted to start a business? Because I know you started a business a few years ago. You're getting old and older and older. It was such a long time ago. when did you just decide that, okay, I don't want to be in practice anymore. This is the route that I want to take.
For me, so I got admitted, and then because part of the funding, I think the clinic was also funded by Justice Department, you know, that dwindled down. So a lot of things needed to shift and so forth. So I started looking, actively looking. So got admitted still at the law clinic, and I don't know, man, you have kids that you have to feed. So at some point, my future first private practice boss actually met her in court. We had previously been on opposing sides and so forth. And one day I'm like, oh, but she's a director at that firm. Let me go try my luck.
Yeah.
So I went to her. I'm like, you know, girly, this is happening. Literally laid down the cards.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. I need a job. So let me know. About a month later, got the job, then I left.
Mm.
Very small firm. And I always say I'm so grateful for them because I learned the art of passion. Because they were actually a very small firm. And there's a lot that needs to happen in a small firm in order for it to run.
Yeah.
But then after that, then I got poached by another big firm. And through them, I learned the art of processes. Passion can only take you so far. But when you have systems and processes, that's actually where the money is. So through them, I actually learned that. But at that point, I mean, my priorities were very different. Unlike other junior associates where literally this is their lives, I had children.
Sure.
And so it did not make sense that I leave home and they're asleep. I come back home and they're asleep.
Sure.
On weekends, I'm either working or if I'm not, I'm exhausted. I'm irritable. Like, I'm just a horrible human, horrible person to be around. So for me, it just did not make sense in order to do that. So it came, you know, head to head. At that point, I was like two, three months pregnant with my last born. And I'm like, eh, this cannot be my life. So I'm like,
I'm out.
I'll see you. I'll see you. And then for me, I mean, other people's experiences are different. But for me, that was the defining factor. And also because at some point when you are vocal about your needs as a woman, as a mother, you are branded a particular way in an environment. And so at some point, I remember hearing through the streets that I was like a feminist. I'm like, oh, really? Oh, okay.
Because
I actually want.
Because I want certain things for my life and for my children.
For my children, yeah.
Sure.
So it's those small things and I'm like, this is not for me. Because I mean, we've established I can't sing.
Yeah.
So
this is it. Law is where we're at.
We're here. And my mind, I value the power of my mind and its ability to think and dream. And I never want to place it in a situation where that ability is compromised. And so for me, I had to come head to head and say, hey, you know what? I can't do this. So let me do my own thing. So yeah.
And that's how you got into your own thing?
That's how I got into
my own
thing.
At 3-4 months pregnant.
Yeah, but
Muriski, hey.
Live on the edge.
Umuriski, and how did things pick up? Like, how did you manage to spend now the time with the children, you know, take care of yourself and your incoming child and just the general expenses that were now, you know, I mean, obviously you had a stable income and now you didn't know.
Now it's touching
go. Is it coming this month or what's going on? You know, how did you manage to just keep things afloat during that, those startup stages?
So for the first, 6 months, actually didn't do anything. Like literally nothing. I think we discount the amount of, not necessarily pressure, and damage is the wrong word, but the amount of impact that being in environments that no longer serve you actually have on you.
Yeah.
So I actually did take that time off, and my last monies or whatever had not been paid within those 6 months. So I was heavily relying on my then ex-husband. It was only around, like, literally when I launched Lenoma, I think I was just about to give birth. I don't know, there was a sudden energy.
Yeah, yeah. There was a sudden desire to birth something.
To birth something. and then that's when I started fighting to get that money back. And then I use that actually as startup capital to fully get into Lenoma. My last born, I call him Baby T. So he's literally a symbol of new birth.
Yeah.
Particularly for that particular environment. It was hard. extremely hard, especially when you are targeting a market that's not so receptive to new ideas at all fronts. We're talking about customers who still don't understand the value of, especially in terms of what I was trying to do,
sure,
the value of online legal services. Mm.
But okay, do you know that you're ahead of your time though?
I was, I know. It's just sad.
Oh, I'm bored now if you had waited. Nyana, COVID, nyana. No, you were ahead of your time. I remember I used to like just, I was in awe of the work you were doing. I was like, how are you doing this? Yeah.
So it was really hard. I mean, I kind of like they called companies like Mindbook. Twitter says 10 rand lawyers.
Oh, yeah. Remember that. Yo, we've been through. So Kulu and partner Twitter has been through a lot.
So I mean, I keep quiet. I'm like, yo, let me not say anything because me too, I'm mad. But it was a good, I don't regret. It was hard, I'm not going to lie. There's some things I wish I could have done different in terms of starting, because you're mixing the traditional side of law, you're mixing technology, you're mixing doing things differently, the market segmentation. Like, there's a bunch of stuff looking back that I would have done different. But I have no regrets because of that journey. Because remember, if you're targeting a very, very niche market and not so receptive market, you still have to find ways to survive.
Absolutely.
And I also then realized the environment, the legal environment, is not progressive enough for what I'm trying to do.
Especially at that time.
At that time. Now it's very nice. People are like, legal tech, congratulations. But at that time, it was so hard. And that's why I actually ended up doing a bunch of stuff. Because a lot of people, the most like questions or comments I typically get about what I do is that, why are you doing too much? Actually, no, it's just one thing, legal tech. It just so happens I'm attacking it in different ways. So because of that journey where I realized, you know what, change will not happen in isolation.
Absolutely.
So I need to attack them everywhere.
Mm.
So I started talking. Started writing, started teaching.
I remember I started, that season actually. Like, hey, you were doing too much. Yo. Now I don't know if you ever managed to rest. You left that firm because you wanted to rest. And then you started doing too much.
So yeah. You must attack them at all fronts.
Yeah.
And where they are.
I remember that season.
So the message remains the same. It's legal tech.
Legal tech.
But you find them in different ways. Oh, you were at school? Me too, I'm there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're going to a conference? No, don't worry. Leah's also there. Oh, you want to read? I wrote a book. For me, I genuinely loved that particular period because there's nothing that inspires creativity than lack of resources.
Mm.
This is why startups move faster and quicker than even the big corps.
Mm. Lack of resources.
Lack of resources. Oh, but creative, sure. Not because there's no course.
You'll be creative for that paycheck. Okay.
There's no course that you actually take in order to be creative. But because you don't have a lot, you will become creative. You will figure it out. This is what I need to do. So for me, that particular period in my life, I really learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about the value that I could give, and that I wasn't crazy because it's through Lenoma that, for example, I became a fellow because of the work that I was doing.
Oh, yes.
And then going to the US at that stage was my first time. I was like,
there's so much life out here. Sure.
Can't do these things happen?
Mm.
Can't you, like, there's a whole world of this particular thing that I'm doing. And it's real. It's valid. Like, there are successful businesses that have been doing this for eons. So it was validation more than anything because I think sometimes when you dream a lot, when you see certain things, it's easy for you to feel alone, to feel maybe I'm doing something wrong. And for me, that
and delusional, hey?
Extremely delusional.
Delusional.
It's like, when something is wrong here.
But you have to be delusional because remember, it's not an easy sell.
Mm.
Like to this day when people are like, "What? So what's sister-in-law about?" You're just like, oh.
Because
it's not the traditional,
no, it's not.
You know, course or path.
Mm.
And now you have to basically tell people that I made up a path, like I made up something that didn't exist. I carved it out.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy buy-in. It's not an easy sell. So you actually do have to be delusional.
You actually have to.
Because you have to believe it.
What's that saying in Afrikaans? Oortloppies. Like, you know those horses, they have those blinders.
Yes, yes.
When you have a dream and you see certain things a particular way, you actually have to have those blinders on. Otherwise, you'll get lost.
The noise.
You'll get lost in the noise. You'll get lost in the sea of people. Who does she think? You know, the number of times... I was told, just go back to practice.
Yeah.
You're doing too much.
And that's not the solution either.
It's actually not the solution. Like, go back to practice. Like, okay, yeah, we get it, fine. But just go back. And I'm like, but my spirit is not there. Mm. There's absolutely nothing wrong. And I always say this, especially for the younger ones that come through and ask. And I'm like, get that done. Like, get admitted. Get that sorted. And I know it's hard in this particular environment, but by all means, try.
Mm.
But it's kind of hard for people like me who've been doing this to actually go back, unless I'm doing it in a way that either I'm doing it on my own account, so I'm doing it differently, or I'm actually innovating within the firm.
Mm.
And I'm so glad, like, the landscape has changed so much, where you're seeing roles that are very, very different now, you know, that are carved for professionals who think different, who think like me.
Yeah.
Your project managers, your legal service delivery managers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's unique things that we typically do not have locally.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful to watch. See it unfold. And to see that they're actually trying to make space for people that do actually have a legal background, but they don't want to practice, you know?
Mm.
But they still want to be part of the environment and actually wanting for it to change for the better.
Mm.
Not necessarily for the firm, which obviously we should be panting for in order to get the support, but actually for the client, for the benefit of the people that you're serving, you know?
Mm. Sure. And I think one of the questions that I've been, you know, just thinking about as we're having this conversation is, you mentioned that you did law school, well, rather, what is it? Articles at Law Clinic, right?
Mm.
And Law Clinic, there was no access to, you know, even information, got legal tech. So how did you stumble across this niche? Like, no Iran to get there.
I actually fell upon legal tech after everything.
Mm.
So Lenoma was never, it didn't start as a legal tech startup. Mm. It was actually consulting. Because I thought to myself, I don't want to go to, like, open a normal, like, traditional firm.
Yeah.
Because I had this view that I couldn't do a lot of things in terms of advertising, in terms of pushing. Because remember, I'm from Bloom.
There's three people there.
No, let me defend my people.
Okay,
no.
Sorry, seven.
And I thought to myself, no, if I actually want to make money, I have to do it differently.
Think outside the box.
So for me, and the knowledge that I had back then, that equated to having a consulting company. Because that means from a marketing, from a positioning, from even targeting, it would be different. And I also would not be limited to just Bloom from a client perspective. So for how I actually discovered about legal tech, I had a client that I needed to consult with. And the nanny didn't pitch. Baby T was still relatively young at that stage. So I don't know. You don't want to lose a client, but you also don't want to go with your baby to a consultation.
You can't.
So I'm probably revealing my age. So we actually Skyped. I asked the client if it would be okay to Skype.
No, you revealed your age when you spoke about Ellie McBeal earlier. I was like, yo, hectic. Please. We are now by Jessica Pearson, okay? Like,
don't let the babies know.
I was just like, yo,
Don't let the babies know.
Okay, so you Skyped.
So we Skyped, yeah. Right? And there was, I got my aha moment and I'm like, oh, so
I can do this.
I can do this. So went on Google and then I'm like, oh, there's such a thing that you can actually provide legal services online. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I started really, really going deeper into it, mm-hmm. changing the model, changing the website. I mean, at our height, we were at like 8 provinces in terms of reach, in terms of clientele, out of our 9 provinces in the country. So at our height, we were like top tier.
Was it Northern Cape that wasn't coming to the party?
Leave me alone. Leave those people alone. They're literally our neighbors.
Okay, so but was it them?
Ma'am. Innerly Northwest, actually. It's actually Northwest. But yeah, you know, for me, like that was my light bulb moment, the need. And I think it's always so funny when people dismiss mothers. Because do you know how creative we are? Do you know how creative you have to be in order to feed your children? Like someone said to me, no, but Leah, when your life is here or here. Like there's no middle. And I'm like, yes, because I take everything to my core. So whatever it is that I do, I actually need to bring it down to my ability to be able to feed my children. That's it. So if it somehow interferes with me being able to put food on the table, then we have a problem.
Sure.
So for me, it's very laughable that women in the workplace, especially mothers, are looked down upon.
Sure.
Do you know that we probably have the highest motivation in order to make it work for you? Because we actually have people that we're looking out for. That's literally the top tier in terms of motivation in order to make things work. So, but anyway, yes. That's how I fell into it.
Sure. I love that aha moment. And, you know, we often hear the truth, actually, about what a business model is built around, a need, right? So I think it was just so beautiful listening to that need and that Skype was able to service for you at that time. I think that's incredible. Sure. Like I said, you're ahead of your time. It wouldn't have even dawned on me that I could
serve anything, ma'am.
That I could.
It literally didn't serve anything.
No, you are ahead of your time. I love that. Tell us a little bit about your journey as an author, as an academic, as a guest lecturer. So on the academic side of things, how did you get into
lecturing? Why uno tsoga
for today ko ngola buka?
I told you, it's always one thing.
Yeah,
like honestly, I sat down and thought to myself, lawyers, I mean, I love us, I'm a lawyer too, but we're actually very ego-driven. And we want to do things that have some form of credibility. And the only way that that can happen for me in order to get credibility and support from the market is actually to write and teach. So, I remember I went to my publisher's Twitter DM. Oh, what? Twitter-ish. It really did the work. went, hey, I want to write da-da-da. Please help me. What's the process? And they actually replied. They're like, oh, okay. Please email whoever. And then the process started. So that's how I actually started writing my first book. Because I had this thing in my head to say, they'll never take you seriously, Leah, if they can't read a book published by a reputable author. I mean, you can write it. I mean, publisher. Like, you can write it. You can put it out there. But they'll never take you serious.
Is this LexisNexis?
LexisNexis is now.
Oh, okay.
The first one is Juta.
Okay.
So I'm like, no, they actually need to take me serious. I mean, you've read books from Juta. Mm-hmm. You're a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll probably take you a bit more serious if a book talking about that particular topic is picked up by them and is pushed by them. So that was my thinking around that.
Yeah.
To say, I need to get some credibility. So because a lot of things, and I think maybe it's the environment that we are in, we often think that things need to come to us, but there's so many things that I can pinpoint in my life where I actually fought so that
it can happen.
It can happen. You know, it's that, even with the teaching at the University of Cape Town, I approached them. I fear nothing, ma'am.
It all boils down to I need to feed my kids.
I fear nothing. Honestly, I will take a chance. Email whoever I need to email. I will call. I will DM. I will
You'll use what you have to get to where you're trying to get to. Yeah.
As long as I have data and Wi-Fi.
Ah, please.
And even if they say no, so what? Did I die? No.
No. No. Yeah, it's, you know.
Like your appetite.
That whole you're not going to die thing, it works. Because you end up just saying, but ngase ishwi. And it's the truth.
Exactly. Like, do you know how many no's this year alone I've gotten? Like this year alone I've gotten. And yet, in terms of what I've been doing now, when people say, they're like, oh no, she's been picked up by LexisNexis. She's now on what clock in the US. Hey. But do you know how many no's I got?
No's. Yeah, and I think, and a lot of the time I know it's good and well for us to, we are able to publicly celebrate those wins, but do the people know at what cost? Like,
cost is high.
Yeah, the cost is
high. But I always hedge my what's it, is it called? Hedging bets. I try to increase my odds by taking as many chances as possible. Because there's no way that, look, if I can take out, let's say, or pitch 10 times and I win once, that's a win.
Yeah. Right?
But if I can pitch 100 times and win 10 times, that's even better.
Sure.
So I actually embrace the losses for me because it typically, and I know this is so cliche, but it's true, because they typically actually take you to where you're supposed to be.
And I hear what you're saying, because when I went in for the third time now for the Mandela Washington Fellowship, I was just like,
you're not the only one, ma'am. Don't worry.
I was like, why are you so stubborn? Like, I keep behind me. I too.
What more do you want?
What more do you want? And I was like, this time,
I'm gonna take a chance.
And luckily, I had saved my previous applications. And when I read the first one and the one that got me the yes, I saw her.
Two different things, ma'am.
When?
Yeah. You were trying.
No better. Like, no chance. That first one, I was chancing.
If we're being honest.
I was chancing because what is this?
Yeah. It is. Like, I don't know. But I think we are trying to cushion people a lot. But that's not the way the world works. You will get your nose.
Yeah.
You will get your horrible bosses. You will get your horrible clients. But that does not mean you stop. It does not mean you either change your environment, you change your client, you change how you move, how you do certain things. Like, we're really, really at a point where sometimes we try to cushion life. But it happens, you will lose at some point.
You will.
You will cry. You will feel frustrated. Literally, me just yesterday, I was on a call with my friend. And he had to tell me, hey, look at you. Who thought? 4 months in, you've even paid rent for the following month. Some of us, we haven't even thought of paying for the following month. Like, you understand? Like, you have come a long way. And I needed to hear that from him specifically because, we've been friends for like 10 years or something. So he's seen me through things. And he's like, remember where you were end of last year? You're thinking, whatever. Yeah. But now look where you are now.
Now.
Mm. So sometimes we cushion things too much.
Mm.
But life is not like that. Mm. It's not easy.
Mm.
And I don't think it's meant to be easy. It just so happens you get the yin and the yang. And yeah. as the seasons move, you have to figure out to be consistent across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's a dip or whether it's an up, you constantly have to keep going. And the fault for me personally is that I'm too ambitious and too impatient.
Mm. Mm.
So I have to believe every day that I'm changing the world. Otherwise, I won't be able to wake up. And I know there's some people, and I'm so grateful. I mean, there's a conversation I used to have with my former boss. He would say to me, but you must remember, Leah, not a lot of people think like you. Because you need to connect your everyday in order for you to get up and do things. There are people out there who are comfortable with just waking up, going to work, coming back, and it's okay. And it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But you don't think that way, and that is okay too. So for me, I need to be able to say, okay, I'm coming here to speak to Tibello. And the hope is that the impact, because of our audience, will be far-reaching.
Mm.
That someone, somebody out there will listen to Leah and think, oh, this is possible.
Mm.
Or, oh, I didn't even know legal tech is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you understand? Mm. I need that type of thinking in order for me to wake up and send that email and harass those people and apply for those things.
Because that's exactly what you gotta do.
And try my luck.
Yeah.
Because if I don't put in that big picture, I won't do anything.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's just...
You won't do anything and banana kasiji.
Like, don't forget
the kids. Otherwise, if they don't eat,
I'll have to answer for my sins.
Yeah.
And I'm not about that life.
Mm.
So at that point, it needs to mean something.
Mm.
So for me, it's always been very important to get the bigger picture and see how it connects to in the long run. Mm. Not only now, but in the long run. For it to be sustainable for me, for the kids, for the life that I want for myself and for them.
Yeah, sure. Leah, thank you for such a beautiful and colorful conversation. For all the chuckles, I feel like khalekotse. But thank you so much I'm so happy I'm the reason you woke up today.
Why are you making me bring out... My laugh.
Hey, Ella sings lady.
No, I'm not a lady.
I love that. In the 2 to 3 minutes that we have left, is there anything that I haven't touched on? You mentioned that there is quite a bit of a reach here. So is there anything that I haven't touched on? Whether it's motivation to a girl in first year who's just found herself having twins, whether it's somebody who's going through a divorce and also managing a new business on the side, or just anything that you'd really like to say that is going to contribute to you changing the world.
Just do it. Don't overthink it.
Mm.
It's a simple but very effective and powerful tool.
Yeah.
Because no one is going to be there for you. We have this delusion that people will actually always be there for
something
us.
Or something.
No, they don't.
Mm.
So just do it and try. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, you pivot. That's the beauty of actually doing something because you figure out what works and doesn't work. But you'll never know until you get your hands dirty, girly.
Mm.
That manicure and all those nice things, get them dirty and do something.
Mm.
Because you'll never know. So you just have to get in.
And definitely one thing that you've been very consistent about in your life is not being afraid to start again.
That's so beautiful.
I think that's your power. Like, you're just like, oh, again, all right, let's get to it then.
You have to.
Let's start. Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. Thank you so much for your time, Leah. It was an absolutely beautiful conversation. Thank you for contributing your invaluable insights to this beautiful platform.
I'm sad. that it's over.
Yep. No.
I'm actually shocked when you said thank you. I'm like, how?
You're like, Ning, I just sat down.
I just started.
I know how you feel. I know how you feel. Thank but you. We have thank come you. To that point in the conversation.
Thank you so much.
Because ibile le wena bitse o rata data le Wi-Fi. So imagine now, omong as nang yona must sit through. Now they can't watch the last right? 5 minutes because, hey.
True.
Thank you so much, Leah.
Thank you.
And to you at home, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like, don't forget to share, comment, and obviously subscribe to this channel. Until next time, bye.